Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
In some polling sites today and speaking to voters who are so excited to have an opportunity to what they believe is send Joe Biden a message that we are outraged and we are going to participate in democracy regardless.
President Biden wins Michigan's Democratic primary, but over 100,000 vote uncommitted in protest over his support for Israel's assault on Gaza. We'll go to Michigan to speak with former Democratic Congressmember Andy Levin, as well as Arab American pollster Jim Zogby. Then we look at the death of Aaron Bushnell, the active duty member of the U.S. Air Force who set himself on fire in front of the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C., protesting U.S. support for the war in Gaza.
I'm an active duty member of the United States Air Force, and I will no longer be complicit in genocide. I'm about to engage in an extreme act of protest, but compared to what people have been experiencing in Palestine at the hands of their colonizers, it's not extreme at all.
We'll speak with one of Aaron Bushnell's friends, a conscientious objector, and with retired Colonel Anne Wright. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden won the Democratic primary in Michigan despite over 100,000 people casting their ballots for uncommitted as voters took part in a protest over Biden's support for Israel's assault on Gaza. Biden won about 81% of the vote in Michigan. 13.3% of voters were uncommitted. In recent weeks, a number of Arab American groups led calls urging voters to choose uncommitted. The group Listen to Michigan had set a goal of 10,000 uncommitted votes, but they secured 10 times that number, receiving about one-sixth of Biden's vote total. Listen to Michigan campaign organizer Leila Alabed spoke Tuesday night.
I can't express enough the amazing team that has come together to put uncommitted on the map as everyone is looking at Michigan in order to save lives. I want to remind everyone that a vote uncommitted was a humanitarian vote. It was our vote to save as many lives as possible.
Placing third in Michigan was Marianne Williamson, who supported a ceasefire in Gaza before dropping out of the race. Dean Phillips placed fourth. Many analysts say Biden's support for Israel could result in him losing the battleground state of Michigan in November. In Michigan's Republican primary, Donald Trump beat Nikki Haley 68-26%. Michigan Republicans will also hold a caucus on Saturday. During an interview with The Wall Street Journal, Nikki Haley warned a Trump victory in November could be, quote, suicide for our country. The UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food has accused Israel of committing war crimes by intentionally depriving food to Gaza. The official, Michael Fakhry, told The Guardian, quote, Israel's announced its intention to destroy the Palestinian people in whole or in part simply for being Palestinian. In my view, as a human rights expert, this is now a situation of genocide, he said. This comes as the United Nations is warning a quarter of all Palestinians are one step away from famine. Ramesh Rajasingham, Coordination Director of the UN's Humanitarian Office, spoke Tuesday.
And here we are at the end of February with at least 576,000 people in Gaza, one quarter of the population, one step away from famine, with one in six children under 2 years of age in northern Gaza suffering from acute malnutrition and wasting.
In Gaza City, residents have described dire conditions where children have no food to eat.
There is no food to feed my children, nor is there any bread. We came to the point where we are eating tree leaves. We are eating the food of this donkey. What more do you want? You are asking me why did I come here? I came because I want to take flour. Look, my leg is broken, and I came to take flour. I came to take flour. You are asking me why did I come? I came yesterday and people stepped over me. I came today even if I were to die. I want to take a bag of flour because I can't feed my children. I don't have anything to give my children to eat. Even if I die, I will stay.
In other developments, representatives from Hamas and Fatah are scheduled to meet in Moscow Thursday to discuss forming a unified government. The meeting comes just days after the Palestinian prime minister and cabinet resigned amidst pressure by the U.S. and Arab countries. In media news, more than 50 prominent broadcast journalists have signed an open letter calling for unfettered access to Gaza. Signatories on the letter include journalists from the BBC, NBC, Sky News, CNN, ABC, and CBS. In the letter, they wrote, quote, "We call on the government of Israel to openly state its permission for international journalists to operate in Gaza and for the Egyptian authorities to allow international journalists access to the Rafah crossing," unquote. Almost no international journalists have been allowed inside Gaza except when embedded with the Israeli military. For the past 5 months, the world has relied on the reporting of Palestinian journalists who have been killed by Israeli forces in record numbers. By one count, over 125 journalists have lost their lives in Gaza. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has credited U.S. public support for Israel as being a key factor in allowing Israel to resist calls to end its war on Gaza. Netanyahu cited one poll that showed 82% of Americans support Israel. Netanyahu said, quote, "This will help us continue the campaign until total victory," unquote. Other polls have painted a very different picture. A recent AP poll found half of U.S. adults said they believe Israel's actions have gone too far. Netanyahu's comments came after President Biden said Israel will, quote, "lose support from around the world if it," quote, "continues on its current path." President Biden hosted congressional leaders at the White House Tuesday for talks on averting a partial government shutdown and to push for passage of a $95 billion package for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson's refused to schedule a vote on the military aid bill, which has already been approved by the Senate. In public remarks, Biden said the consequences of inaction on approving money for Ukraine are dire. The fifth largest wildfire in Texas history has forced a nuclear weapons facility outside Amarillo to temporarily pause operations Tuesday. The Smokehouse Creek fire has burned more than 300,000 acres of land since Monday. Evacuations were ordered in parts of Texas and Oklahoma. Texas Governor Greg Abbott's issued disaster declarations for 60 counties as temperatures have soared across the region. On Monday, temperatures in Dallas reached 94 degrees Fahrenheit. Heat records have been broken across the Midwest. In other climate news, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen met with Brazil's Environment Minister Marina Silva in Sao Paulo Tuesday. Silva warned the climate emergency could lead to more global conflict.
We are living in a context of wars with terrible losses from a humanitarian point of view, from an ethical, political, social, economic point of view. It is practically unspeakable what is happening in the world with the wars that are happening, and obviously that we want peace. But in the context of climate change, we cannot forget, deny the fact that we can have great instabilities if we do not solve the problem of climate change.
A Russian court has sentenced the longtime human rights activist Oleg Orlov to 2.5 years in prison for speaking out against Russia's invasion of Ukraine and taking part in anti-war demonstrations. Orlov is a leader of the now liquidated rights group Memorial, which won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2022 and the Right Livelihood Award in 2004. He briefly spoke Tuesday after the sentencing.
We live in the 21st century. Those guys are going backwards to 20th, 17th, and even 16th. Unfortunately, they are dragging our country with them. But we will win anyway.
In other news from Russia, the funeral for Alexei Navalny will be held in Moscow on Friday. The Russian opposition leader died nearly 2 weeks ago in an Arctic prison. His wife, Yulia, addressed the European Parliament earlier today. In Guinea, at least two young protesters were killed Monday as a general strike against military rule paralyzed the capital, Conakry. Clashes broke out between security forces and demonstrators as Guinea's union leaders are demanding an end to media censorship and lower food and living costs. The strike comes 1 week after the military government, which took power in a 2021 coup, unexpectedly dissolved the transitional government that had been in place since 2022, seizing the passports of government members and freezing their bank accounts. Demonstrations in Guinea have been rare since the coup. Military leaders banned all protests in 2022 and arrested several opposition leaders, activists, and journalists. Unions leading the recent strike are also demanding the release of Sekou Jamal Pendessa of the Union of Press Professionals of Guinea, who was arrested in January. In Mexico, two mayoral candidates from the state of Michoacán were killed Monday within hours of each other. Miguel Ángel Zavala and Armando Pérez Luna were preparing to begin their campaigns for mayor of Maravatío in the coming days when they were gunned down in separate incidents. Both candidates were found shot to death in their cars. Many have warned Mexico's upcoming June election could be one of the most violent on record. Michoacán has been at the center of drug cartels fighting over territorial control. Zavala was a gynecologist running with President Andrés Manuel López Obrador's party, Morena. Luna was the mayoral candidate for the Conservative National Action Party. In California, the city of San Francisco has issued a formal apology to Black residents for supporting policies that perpetuated decades of racism and discrimination. A resolution was unanimously approved by city supervisors Tuesday, apologizing to the African-American community and their descendants for, quote, decades of systemic and structural discrimination, targeted acts of violence, atrocities, said San Francisco Supervisor Walton, who was the lead proponent of the resolution and the only Black member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. But racial justice advocates say an apology is not enough as they continue to pressure San Francisco officials to approve over 100 other proposals for reparations. Boston's the only other U.S. city that's issued a similar apology, while at least nine other states have formally apologized for slavery. And in labor news, thousands of hourly workers at a Mercedes-Benz plant in Vance, Alabama, have signed union cards to join the United Auto Workers. More than half of some 6,000 workers said they support joining the union, a major victory in one of the largest Mercedes-Benz plants in the United States. Workers are demanding higher wages and better working conditions. In a statement, Mercedes worker Jeremy Kimbrell said, quote, "We haven't taken this step lightly. For years, we've fallen further behind while Mercedes has made billions," unquote. Earlier this month, the majority of Volkswagen workers at a plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee, signed cards to join the UAW. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, we go to Michigan, where over 100,000 voters cast their ballots for uncommitted in yesterday's Democratic primary in protest over President Biden's support for Israel's assault on Gaza. Stay with us.
We'll be right back.
Detroit's Jay Dilla's The Difference. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show in Michigan, where President Joe Biden won the Democratic primary Tuesday, but faced a significant backlash over his support for Israel's assault on Gaza. Biden won about 81% of the vote, but over 100,000 voters, or more than 13%, cast their ballots for uncommitted. In recent weeks, the group Listen to Michigan urged Democrats to vote uncommitted to pressure Biden to call on Israel to end its assault on Gaza. Organizers of the campaign had said they were hoping for 10,000 uncommitted votes, pointing to Donald Trump's win of less than 11,000 votes in 2016 to show the significance of that number. Tuesday's vote shows they got 10 times that amount. Michigan is the first major battleground state in the general election to hold its primary. It's also home to one of the largest Arab American populations in the country. Top White House officials visited Michigan earlier this month to meet with Arab and Muslim leaders after a number of them refused to meet with Biden's campaign manager. The movement to vote uncommitted will likely spread to other states. Organizers of the movement are holding a call with supporters in Minnesota, which will vote next week, and Washington State, which holds its primary March 12th. For more, we're joined by two guests. James Zoghbi is president of the Arab American Institute. His new opinion piece for Pakistan Today is titled Why the USA Continues to Fail the Arab World. He's joining us from Utica, New York. We're also joined by former Democratic Congress member from Michigan, Andy Levin. He's joining us from Southfield, Michigan. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! You're a former Congress member, Andy Levin. You're also a former synagogue president. Talk about this uncommitted campaign. For every six votes President Biden got yesterday in the primary, uncommitted got one. Talk about the organizing effort and what message that you hope that those who supported uncommitted like yourself sent to President Biden.
Well, good morning, Amy and everyone. I don't have much of a voice left, so sorry about that. It was really an incredible thing, Amy. You know, I've been organizing for peace for 40 years, and I've rarely seen such an organic and authentic movement come together in, as you say, just 3 weeks. And we got over 100,000 people to vote uncommitted. This was something that grew up out of the Arab American and larger Muslim communities in Michigan. But it had great power among progressives, among Jewish people, Christians, Muslims, people of other faiths, people of no faith. College campuses were aflame about this. And the idea was that Michigan has this uncommitted box on our ballot, because remember, this is a presidential primary and some other states do the same thing. You're voting to send delegates to a convention, so you could vote to send delegates uncommitted. And in fact, we won so many votes, I believe we will send at least one delegate from two congressional districts, the 6th district represented by Debbie Dingell and the 12th district represented by Rashida Tlaib. I think the significance of this, Amy, is that the president's people and maybe the president himself, there's a danger that they see this as sort of like a political problem. We need to send surrogates. We need better messaging. People just need to realize what a disaster Trump would be, which, of course, we can never let him get near the White House again. So they'll come around all of this. No, this is war. This is the killing of tens of thousands of innocent people, leveling whole neighborhoods, most of the Gaza Strip. We don't just want you to use a better message. The message from us to the president yesterday was, you must change course. You must change course for the sake of your political reelection and because it's the right and necessary thing to do from every point of view, including U.S. national security interests, for God's sake. The message to the president is stop treating what Bibi Netanyahu says as the boundary of the possible. You've got to move towards an immediate and permanent ceasefire and an end to this carnage. Free all the hostages, free political prisoners among the Palestinians, including leading longtime prisoners who, if you don't like Hamas, free Marwan Barghouti, who's been in prison for so long, who many Palestinians might support to change the situation there. So we really need actual change in policy, and I think we sent that message strongly last night.
Andy Levin, I wanted to ask you, I was particularly struck by the turnout. The Michigan Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson, said this was a record turnout on Tuesday for a presidential primary, compared to, for instance, South Carolina, where only 4% of Democrats voted in the primary. Here we had over, it looks like 50%. Could you explain this issue of turnout as well?
Well, one thing is that there were greater number of Republicans voting or people voting in the Republican primary than the Democratic primary. That's also something that's not great for President Biden. But there was some sense of a contest on that side, right? Even though we all know that Nikki Haley was going to trail by a wide margin. But it is remarkable, Juan. Think about it. We have an incumbent Democratic president running for re-election. We all know he's going to be the nominee. Most Democrats feel like maybe he's done a really great job in other areas. Personally, I was really proud to serve with him in the 117th Congress. I'm proud of the Investing in America agenda that we passed, having some at least a semblance of industrial policy in America for the first time in many decades, and on and on. But what's remarkable is that this 100,000 plus people who voted uncommitted, almost all of them, Juan, wouldn't have showed up but for this. They're mad at the president. They would have stayed home. And our message was, wait a minute, that would be a disaster if you stayed home. He won't get the message. He won't understand. Come out and express your rage. Shake your fist at the president and say, look, for most of them, I voted for you in 2020. I'm really mad at you right now, and I have to tell you. So that, I think, juiced turnout. And look at East Lansing, where Michigan State University is. Look at Ann Arbor, where the University of Michigan is. It's not just Dearborn and Hamtramck with our incredible, beautiful concentration of Arab American and other Muslim voters. It's also young people across the state and progressives across the state who said, we're your base. We want to win in November. In order to win, we want peace now.
Andy Levin, the last time we talked to you, you were a Congress member. You were running for re-election. AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, had invested millions in Democratic primaries to defeat progressives who supported Palestine. You were one of those they were trying to defeat. You're a self-described Zionist who supports a two-state solution. But earlier, before that primary, a former president of AIPAC described you as arguably the most corrosive member of Congress to the U.S.-Israel relationship. Can you talk about what happened to you then? You lost that election. But do you see your point of view being embraced much both in Michigan and around the country in a way that AIPAC never imagined?
I do, Amy. I mean, basically, they spent millions of dollars of dark money. They raised a huge amount of so-called hard money for my opponent in that primary, who basically towed the AIPAC line completely. And now they say they're going to spend $100 million in 2022. And evidently, they've already raised $44 million to take out progressives and Democratic primaries. And much of their money is coming from Republican billionaires who don't have any place in a Democratic primary. And shame on us as Democrats if we continue to allow Democratic candidates to take Republican money in Democratic primaries. But here's the situation. this avalanche of mostly dark money coming to try to interfere with Democratic primaries is running into a tsunami of upset by Democratic-based voters who say the Jewish people deserve self-determination. What about the Palestinian people? And in fact, there is no peace and security for the Jewish people in the Holy Land unless and until we realize the political and human rights of the Palestinian people. And we have to love each other. We have to support each other. We have to find a way to live together. And yes, this is a huge rebuke to that point of view that we must support the Israeli government no matter what they do. I mean, why are we letting Bibi Netanyahu set the boundary of the possible? This man has never been for a just peace for one day in his life. He's actively opposed Palestinian self-determination his whole career. Like some other people we know, he's fighting to stay in office so that he doesn't go to jail. I mean, come on. You could support the people of Israel and the people of Palestine without supporting these horrible policies and this horrible war. I mean, you know, think of the average. I think of myself, Amy, 40 years ago when I was a college student. And if I read what the New York Times reported, for example, that the U.S. was supplying 2,000-pound bombs to Israel, and the IDF was dropping them not just on densely populated areas, but on places where they had told the Palestinians to flee. And then at the end of the article, by the way, we've sent 5,000 more of one type of 2,000-pound bombs to Israel since October. That, Andy Levin, 40 years ago, is not unlike college students and other young people all around Michigan's campuses and working people saying, whoa, this is unacceptable. And we showed the president that we don't accept it yesterday.
Yeah, I'd like to bring in James Zogby to the conversation, get your reaction to the vote in Michigan, and also whether you think that this uncommitted movement could spread across the country, especially now as we head into Super Tuesday on March 5th.
Well, look, number one, I want to thank Andy Levin for his leadership. He was made an enormous difference here, and we're so pleased to be partnering as we were in this campaign. Secondly, I think message sent. 100+ thousand uncommitted votes, much larger than anyone anticipated, makes a point. President Biden, you ignore this vote at your risk. And thirdly, I think there frankly is not a need to go any further. And I think that it's very clear we can extrapolate from the rest of the states what the turnout would be in November if we ignore this issue and continue to ignore this issue, not only as the congressman said, with the Arab American vote, but with young voters, black voters. We've done polling. My brother John has done polling on this among American voters, not just Arab American voters. The impact that the Gaza war is having on voters under 29, the impact it's having on black, Latino, and Asian voters who are core to the Democratic coalition is very clear. We just wanted to make a point in Michigan. It was the place to make the point. But frankly, it also can be read in Virginia. It can be read in Georgia. It can be read in Pennsylvania. You ignore this war and you continue to offer nothing but anodyne. Well, we're really with you and we feel bad, too. And we're paying attention and working every day. That does not cut it at this point. There is genocide unfolding. People want it to end. The president either is going to have to act decisively to end it, or it's going to have an impact in November. And as the congressman said, as the organizers of this movement have been very clear, this is not the abandoned Biden movement. This is the, for God's sake, shape up or you might lose in November Biden movement. And the fact is that the president has to listen and change. It's going to be too late for some. The fact that 30,000 have already died, that famine is on the way, that genocide has continued, is going to mean a lot of people are going to say, I can't do this. I just can't do it. But if there's to be any effort at all made to bring some voters back, something dramatic has to happen and change from the White House to say,